What does it take to become a police officer in the U.S. these days? Well, according to a Marshall Project investigation, there is a strong set of hiring preferences for U.S. war veterans, and that large numbers of veterans seek to join the pool of new cops, bringing with them, in many cases, some special personnel issues. Simone Weichselbaum is a staff writer for the Marshall Project. She investigated the veteran-to-cop pipeline over an 11-month period for a report that was published this week. William Thomas is a longtime member of the Newark, New Jersey Police Force, started his career in law enforcement in 1985, was deployed to Iraq in 07-08. He is currently a retired sergeant with the Newark PD. William Thomas, Simone, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
All right, so what concerned you particularly about this pipeline?
So the idea of the story came when I was in Chicago last year reporting on something else, and I met several young officers who went from Iraq and Afghanistan straight to the Chicago Police Department, all under the age of 30. And I was like, that was interesting. So when I came back to work, I was like, I really want to make this my next project. The problem is there's no data.
In every case, an officer who wants to join the police force is given some kind of mental health screening, I would suspect.
Medium to large size departments, yes. My colleague, who we partnered on this investigation, found a report from BJS, the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which reported about half of departments, mainly small departments, don't offer any screening at all.
Now, how have you found this to be an actual practical issue on the job, William Thomas?
Well, for me, it was towards the end of my career when I deployed to Iraq. And when I came home, I went back to work. I was there maybe two tours, and my world just kind of fell apart, and I ended up in the VA system off and on for about a year before I actually went back to work to retire.
How would you assess your abilities as an officer, what you need, the tools that you need to do your job prior to deployment and then after deployment?
Well, prior to, I had military training prior to
becoming
a police officer. So that skill set that I learned in the military aided me while I was a police officer in Newark. None of that changed when I came home from Iraq, other than the initial PTSD issues that I began to suffer with.
So, I mean, you understood after your deployment that you were taking PTSD onto the job with you. How challenging was that?
Well, it was difficult, and to credit the Newark Police Department, they allowed me to come back in an administrative role where I did not have to have contact with civilians and citizens and back into that environment of policing. So I was able to finish my career in an administrative role.
But this is a serious issue for an officer who's armed on the streets, would you say?
I would say so, but having PTSD as a police officer, I mean, you can get that from, you know, calls that you may go on. So I don't see that it totally precludes an officer from being able to do their duties.
Do you think there's a support network that needs to be there that, based on your investigation, is sorely needed?
Yeah, so I wanted to take William Thomas's story as an example. The way I met him was through the Newark Police Supervisors Union. And to my understanding, it wasn't an easy path to retirement. From what the union said, they were aware of his issues, and they really had to advocate and push the department to say, hey, take him off the streets, put him on desk duty. It's not an immediate thing. And the police department did acknowledge that to us. And so what I found while reporting the story is while departments weren't necessarily cooperating, unions were. Union presidents in New Jersey, in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia were really helpful for this reporting because they actually can pinpoint officers who they're helping who are currently on the job. And what we found, especially in Philly, is they're directing people into a treatment center when there's several of these across the country that specialize in addiction and PTSD issues for those who are combat veterans and police officers.
Simone, we've heard lots of stories in issues of police brutality and police misconduct that there's a militarization of police departments around the country, and that can have a negative effect in communities. Do you think the veteran pipeline is something that exacerbates that, that makes that worse, that suggests that some veterans maybe shouldn't be on the street who are?
So what we found in our reporting, again, there's no data out there. So we, through public records law, tried to get information from 33 police agencies from across the country. Only three gave us enough data to analyze. So the disparities we found were in Miami and in Boston. And we did find that those with veteran status did rack up more use of force complaints.
We want veterans to be employed. But do you think we have a system in place that can deal with the issues and risk factors that are coming back from combat in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Not at all. So when you speak to these police chiefs, most of them are men, and most of them are really macho, and they're like, we don't have a problem. No one's complaining. Well, of course no one's complaining. Like, this is an environment that if you're perceived as weak, you could lose your job. You'll be made fun of. You'll get a crappy shift. But it's really interesting. A female chief, Kathy O'Toole in Seattle, is actually the person who directed me. Like, you need to look into these laws. So I found women commanders and the union heads were the ones who were sympathetic to these guys and women, not the actual police chiefs in these big cities.
And, of course, you know, the service to the country is a very important factor here. But what is the likelihood, William Thomas, that an individual veteran might be continuing a war on the streets of a city as a police officer without any support because of some of the issues that Simone is talking about?
Well, I would hope that these officers returning from combat zones or actual combat would be getting help through the VA, even if their police department denies them or if they're afraid to report that to their agency, that they would seek treatment through the VA system, which they have access to.
Do you think that's enough?
I believe so.
How about you, Simone?
Not at all. So officers who I met, and William Thomas, again, is a little older, are most 20s, 30s guys who told me in our interviews, which we didn't really use in the story, they're suffering from nightmares or they go home and talk to their wives about their issues. But it's embarrassing to report and say, hey, I have a problem. So I found that most officers who are getting help, it's through the peer-to-peer network. And it's sort of like off-the-books therapy. And if more help is needed, they are plugged into a therapist network of the city.
Possible challenges and risks in the veteran to police force pipeline from Iraq and Afghanistan. Simone Weichselbaum is a staff writer for the Marshall Project. She investigated the veteran to cop pipeline over an 11-month period for a report that was published this week. And also with us, William Thomas, longtime member of the Newark, New Jersey Police Force, sergeant retired. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.